Welcome to another exciting episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies.
We don't need that kind of pressure.
Yeah, really. We're going to talk about a lot of good stuff today. Well, I don't know if it's good or not. Stay tuned and find out. A lot of big movies like 20th Century Women starring Annette Bening and Live by Night with Ben Affleck, who wrote, directed, and starred in that, and The Founder with Michael Keaton, where he plays Ray Kroc, the sort of founder of McDonald's, and Patriot's Day, which is the new movie that was directed by Peter Berg and stars Mark Wahlberg about the Boston Marathon bombing.
And I think we're going to hear from Mark Wahlberg.
We are.
We're going to
hear from Mark Wahlberg. And I am joined today, as always, with Bill Bregoli.
I'm overrated.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm here, but I'm not by.
And and not that there's anything wrong with that. And sitting in...
Who are these people?
And sitting in... the microphone dropped. We're just so high-tech.
Mic drop. You're like Obama at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner.
And sitting in with us is our friend from WBAI, Mike Sargent, is back to join the show today.
I'm excited.
All right, so what do you want to talk about first, Bill?
The Quiet Storm.
Well, we talked about last week that we hadn't all seen it, but we had some sound from Mark, and you know, I think we're all pretty much agreement. We don't know about Mike, though. I like the movie. You like the movie. Mike, jump in here.
Well, you know, I thought actually Patriot's Day surprised me because I thought it was a really, really good film. I thought it was very well done. I thought it was tense. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was engrossing. But I absolutely do not think this movie needs to come out right now. I absolutely do think that this is
too soon. You're saying too soon.
It's too soon, especially with the tone of things. I feel like it's the kind of movie that'll play in places where people already have a bias against Muslims. And I just feel it's a movie that will cause more problems than it gains.
Rolling Stone's Logan Hill was on the show when we did the movie. Remember this, Neil? He said, "It's too entertaining. It's not." No, what he meant was it's making something horrific too entertaining too soon, which I thought was a really interesting point. I didn't get that sense of it at all. I thought it was a very good movie that took me to that place, but I understand that criticism.
I like the movie. Whether, you know, the whole argument about whether it's too soon to do a movie about, you know, this horrific tragedy that, you know, with three people were, you know, died in the Boston Marathon explosions and, you know, 100, 200 and some odd other people got injured. That's a whole other argument. If I want to look at the film, you know, that's like making the same argument. Do you want to do the World Trade Center bombing movie? Do you want to do that particular movie? But that said, I think that, you know, I had a few problems with the movie. To begin with, there were a lot of different characters in the movie, and they were all based on real people in the Boston Police Department. Or the FBI, played by Kevin Bacon, and who else was named some of the actors?
J.K. Simmons played.
J.K.
Simmons was one.
John Goodman.
Right, John Goodman.
And those are all real people.
Right, those are
and I know where you're going with
people.
This.
And the Mark Wahlberg person character, Mike is playing with some food and foil and probably
don't worry about it.
On the mic. All right,
we're pretty loose here.
Okay, so the Mark Wahlberg
character. We're a laid-back show.
It's either that or his stomach grumbles.
is a fictitious character, and my point.
Well,
is
it's
that
six fictitious. Well, it's six
a composite
real,
of like a lot of different people, and
right.
I'm saying if you're doing something about sensitive subject matter like this, and you're going to do, you know, a docudrama, then I don't feel that it serves the story to make up a character, which is what the Mark Wahlberg
but
character
you'd never
is.
Get Wahlberg to be one of six guys. You get Wahlberg to be Mark Wahlberg. And
well,
so
I just don't think you, because it is too soon, as Mike said, I don't think you mess with history and do a character. I mean, he's there at the finish line when the bombing happens. He's at the center of the investigation. He's there when they catch the criminals. You know,
but he's Zelig. He's always there.
You know,
he's,
but
it's like a John Jakes novel.
But I do think it was very interesting. I mean, you know, I think the two guys who played the terrorist brothers, those two actors did a very, very good job.
Very.
And, you know, I think, you know, just watching the whole thing unfold and, you know, how after they did the bombing, they were just going home and watching it on television. You know, and then, you know, how they kidnapped this, you know, Asian immigrant person and, you know, and hijacked his car. And just and even the thing, the wife, she's the actress who plays the wife of one of the bombers.
Her interrogation scene is brilliant.
She's the actress who plays Supergirl on the television
show. Right, Melissa Benoist, yeah.
Right. She's very good. And, you know, and she's like, "I have rights." And the other woman goes, "You don't have any rights." You know what I mean? So I thought that
Let me ask you this, Neil.
Who did Friday Night Lights.
Is it as strong a movie if you have six different people or you have a through line with, you have Mark Wahlberg, then you have somebody ready to identify with as a moviegoer, I think you kind of have to have that. I don't think they would have made the movie.
And I have to say, I do disagree with you, Neil, and on that point. I agree with everything else you said about the movie, but I think for the focus of the narrative, I think we needed it to be one character. I think that there are a lot of people, a lot of things going on. You don't really know how it all comes together. If we had like another four or five characters, it would have really seemed unfocused. And, you know, we needed to kind of get, yeah, there were heroic figures in this. I guess I still, and you made a very interesting point about him being there. I had that same...
Mic drop.
Oh, you broke something.
Can you hold that in your hand?
Yeah, hold your hand.
Like Vic Damone? Okay, thank you.
He'll
be here all week.
Okay,
I think I had that kind of problem with the butler. That's why that film didn't work for me. It's like, yes, every moment in history, like he's right there.
You know,
the civil rights, whatnot. I didn't have that problem with this movie. I guess, like I said, I just became uncomfortable. I just came uncomfortable because right now, and I think films clearly and stories that cultures tell say a lot about the culture at the time. And I think right now, you know, I've been incredibly disappointed by, you know, the thinking of a lot of people in this country. And I just felt that it kind of plays into that. And while I thought that, like what you said, that the two actors were great, and on some levels you understand how the younger brother, you know, is influenced by the older brother. But I really didn't get enough of a sense, for me, of why they do what they do. Because, you know what, if I weren't American, I could see a lot of reasons for people to not like America. That doesn't justify anything.
You're saying the movie didn't explain to you why they do what they do?
Not enough for me.
Interesting. What do you think of the film, Bill Burgoyne?
Yeah, I see his point there. And going back to another thing you said, as far as it being too early, and we being in a difficult place and time in this country right now, mm-hmm. when are we ever going to be able to run this movie then?
You know, not just before Trump comes in office.
Let's be clear about one thing, though, Neil. You're after all of this is said and done, and while you'd have preferred a more realistic depiction, you still recommend the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
No, Neil.
Oh.
I like the movie. I'm telling you that I like the movie. I think Peter Berg, who's, again, did the TV show Friday Night Lights, and which is one of my all-time favorite shows.
The Kingdom, a great movie that I love.
He also did
Very Bad Things.
The Lone Survivor. Look, he's done some terrible movies, too. He did Battleship, and he did... and I didn't like Deepwater Horizon either, but, you know...
Better movie than you say, but keep going.
I think that this is... No, I would recommend the movie. I think he really, I mean, you know, as you say, Mike, it's kind of weird to say this, but I think he I won't say entertaining, but he made a realistic, I mean, you know, when those bombs go off and you hit those aerial shots of what's happening and, you know,
The gunfight near the end is amazing, that's too, because it's not like in the movies. Yeah. The cops are shooting at each other. They're kind of very disoriented.
Listen, I read in a review of the movie after I saw the movie by I think it's Ty Burr, who writes for the Boston Globe. You know, and this is a Boston reporter. He used to write for Entertainment Weekly.
Right.
And he was very offended by the movie. And he was talking to Bostonians saying, you know, we all know what happened. We were all there. This is very offensive. I understand if people get offended by the movie. I mean, you know, having lived in New York during, you know, when the World Trade Center went down, some of these movies that came out afterwards, I'm like, yeah, like, where do you come off recreating this and trying to make
I
understand
that. Yeah.
But that said, you know, I think for what this is, I think that it's not, I was not personally offended by the movie. Were you offended by the movie?
No, I wasn't. No, my biggest problem was that it was maybe a bent to too many movies and read too many screenplays, but it was just too obvious to me that Mark Wahlberg's character was a composite. Everybody else was real, and his character
was made. Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. It's too obvious if you watch it.
I wonder, though, what was Peter Berg's motivation for this film? Is there any way to know what's in his head?
Well, I actually got to talk to him.
Okay, thank you.
And his motivation, he says, was to do credit to the people of Boston.
I was actually in New York when the marathon bombings happened, and I remember paying very close attention to it and being very, very aware and very touched by how the city clearly came together and rallied together to capture these two criminals, but also to support themselves so much after the bombings. And I was very touched by how that community came together.
And we also got to talk to Mark Wahlberg, and Mark talked about the movie's theme.
Good will always overcome evil. People will continue to do bad things, but they cannot dictate how we live our lives. We need to be able to go to a marathon. We need to be able to go to a baseball game. We need to be able to go to the movies. We need to be able to live normal lives. And we all need to come together, and I think a good always prevails over evil.
That's right. Boston Strong. Mac said it right, as we used to say.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to ask anybody to tell a Boston story, it's either going to be an Affleck or a Wahlberg.
Well, speaking about Affleck, you're queuing us all up. Mark, Ben Affleck's new movie is Live by Night, and he wrote it. It's based on
a Dennis Lehane novel.
Right, based on a novel, but he wrote the screenplay, and he directed it, and he stars in it.
And he co-produced it.
And yeah, he's all over the movie.
And he rented the antique cars from a friend of mine.
I think that, you know, he has proven himself as a director.
In this movie, we could call him a one-man bland.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that. But, Mike, why don't you tell everybody what the movie is about?
Well, the movie is about a bootlegger who ends up going to prison. When he gets out, he ends up getting involved with organized crime. And the man who put him in prison, he ends up working for him and ends up becoming a notorious gangster in Miami. And it's clearly...
Well, the crime organization is run out of Miami, but actually he's in Tampa.
Right, he's in Tampa,
I think.
Sorry,
basically South Florida.
It's South Florida. Let me not blanket Miami as all of South Florida. But, you know, it's obvious an homage to gangster films of the 30s and 40s.
That we've seen a million times.
But it's also an homage to, you know, the more modern Scarface, Goodfellas, you know. So he tries to combine some of the innocence of those gangster films and that noirness along with some of the grit. And it ends up being an uneven film that has great ambitions, but kind of collapses under the weight of what it's trying to do. It felt to me a little too politically correct. He goes up against the KKK. He's got a Cuban girlfriend. It's like, okay, what else could he do that makes him the likable criminal? And there were just too many things. And
they cast the great Irish actress Sienna Miller as his Irish girl.
I liked Elle Fanning.
I mean, I liked the actors. I thought Elle Fanning was actually quite good in the movie, but I at the end of the day, while I was entertained, you know, I know you weren't, Neil. But
no, I
no, he likes it.
I like the movie, and I was
I
entertained.
I like the movie.
I thought that ultimately, like I said, it collapsed under the weight of what it was trying to do.
Okay, I like the movie, and there's certainly flaws in the movie. There's no question about that. I mean, I think that Ben Affleck, the actor in the movie, is trying to have it both ways. He's trying to be a badass, and he's also, you know, trying to have it like, but he's got a conscience underneath it all.
Right.
And I don't think that that role, even though he wrote it for himself, really best suits him.
No.
And I think
he can't play bad guys.
You know,
that's what I said on the show.
And I think that there's other, right, this
but
is an after.
But he could Costner the first 20 years of his career.
This show is an after show to a television show that we do, by the way, on New York One called Talking Pictures, and it airs locally in New York One, and it airs nationally on Time Warner Cable and Spectrum. But I will say that, yeah, you know, it's on the positive side, the attention to period detail is great. Those cars, as you said, Bill Bregoli, the costumes, the cinematography.
That's movie making 101.
He's really recreated Boston in the 1920s. Boston. He's made it look great.
Yeah, there was no Chevy Camaro in there. Right. Good for him.
And I think that the supporting performances by Brendan Gleeson and Elle Fanning and Chris Messina and Chris Cooper are very, very good.
Chris Messina's way miscast.
And, you know, I think that, okay, problems. Okay, I don't think that Affleck had much chemistry with Zoe Saldana, who they have a relationship in the movie. I didn't really see any spark between those particular two people. And
I saw more spark between her and what's his name, who plays Spock, and he's gay.
Zachary
Quinto.
Right, it's overly ambitious. There's no question about that. I mean, there's a mafia component into this when he's talking to the Godfather, which is also right out of the Godfather. This guy is like, you know, your loyalty is first to our family. And, you know, okay, I get it. But I'm not going to—
In an ambush in a hotel that gets out ambushed because there's a special tunnel underneath the hotel. It's like, come on.
But I'm not going to fault Ben Affleck for trying a different genre. I give him credit for that. And despite all the floors, look at it. Despite all
the hotel has many floors.
There's many floors. There's tile floors. There's wooden floors. There's marble floors. But despite all the flaws in the movie, I still found it fun and entertaining, and I recommend the movie. I enjoyed it.
I wish it had been entertaining.
It would probably be a better on-demand rental or a Netflix rental. But if you go and pay full price at the box office for it, I don't think that you're going to come out of that thing going, that was really just, I wasted my money. I think it's an entertaining
film. It's no Once Upon a Time in America.
My take is, it was kind of dull, and my biggest disappointment was Sienna Miller actually brought some energy to the movie, but she goes away for most of it.
Yeah, well, she goes away for most of it.
That's true. But I don't know. I think it's watchable, you know, and the fate of the main character, despite—
They'll put that on the poster. It's watchable. Neil Rosen.
It's fun. I was interested all the way through to see where it was going, and I was interested in the fate.
You know what? I agree with this. It takes itself very seriously, and I think too seriously, and I think Ben Affleck thought he was making a much better movie than he ended up making.
Well, apparently there's an entire thing that got cut out of the movie with his brother. His brother goes off to Hollywood to write screenplays, and something comes up with that later, but they cast an actor in that role, and God
knows— Casey Affleck?
No, but there's a whole storyline.
So I mentioned Once Upon a Time in America a minute ago.
Well, that's
like an epic about the story.
A 4-hour movie.
So would you rather see a longer version of this movie now? You want to see that brother storyline added in?
I'd like to see the brother storyline. If it came out on DVD, I don't know if I'd watch the whole movie again.
I think some movies benefit from more time. The Godfather was too short when Robert Evans greenlit the first version, and he said, went back to Coppola and said, you made a trailer, add in all the sauce, give me more sauce. I don't think this movie benefits from another storyline.
Really? Like Batman versus Superman?
Yeah. What do you think, Bricoli?
I told you, Sienna Miller was my favorite part. She went away. It was boring.
All right.
All right. What else we got?
You're bored
okay.
after the blonde.
Here's a movie that I loved. Bill.
20th Century Women. I'm really glad you're bringing that up.
Let's do the founder. Let's do the founder.
The founder is Michael Keaton in the role of Ray Kroc. This is the guy who basically was selling milkshake machines when he stumbled in California across a couple of brothers who, for all intents and purposes, invented fast food, or at least invented the way it was manufactured. And he realizes that these two guys, the McDonald's brothers, that's the name he took, right? Those are their real names, right? So Nick Offerman is one of them. They're kind of oafish, kind of like nerdy. They know how to make hamburgers really quickly, but they're resistant to doing what the Keaton character wants them to do, which is franchise the business. He's successful in talking them into opening a few more franchises, and eventually he steals the whole company from them. The problem for me with this movie, as good as Keaton is that all the bad news about Ray Kroc, and there's a lot of bad news, he steals people's wives, he double-crosses the brothers, it all comes in the last 20 seconds of the movie. So I understand why Keaton wanted to play this part. I just think it's a big cheat for the audience.
Okay, no, I don't.
It's a Kroc.
First of all, I don't agree. If this was on my 10 best list in 2016. I love the movie. First of all, Keaton is electric. He's tremendous as this Ray Kroc guy. First of all, the guy's a loser. He's in his middle 50s, and he's selling multi-mixer milkshake machines, and he's getting his ass kicked by the Hamilton Beach Corporation.
So he should screw people over.
Just wait a second. Let me say my piece here. He can't even get arrested. He can't sell one of these things. He's listening to motivational records before he goes to sleep at night in these cheap danky hotels to try to get inspired to even get the energy up to go out and get rejected the next day selling these machines. This is the beginning of the movie, and that's fascinating because you know that this guy's going to become like
this, I agree 100% with what you've just said.
This billionaire guy, and then he finds this hole in the wall place in San Bernardino where these two brothers run this place called McDonald's, and nobody ever heard of fast food. I mean, he goes into this place, and he goes, where's the waitress? Well, there are no waitresses. Well, where do I sit down and eat my food? Well, you could go on the bench out there. You could eat it in your car. You could take it home. The whole thing was revolutionary. We take fast food for granted so much these days. This was a whole concept that, you know, you order the hamburger and 2 seconds later it's there. It was a whole assembly line like the way Henry Ford put together Model Ts. It was a brilliant concept. I love that historical aspect of it. I think.
Did you take your heart attack medicine? Because really, you're about to go. You're really about to lose it.
The whole period of capturing that era of the 50s when he's ordering, before there was fast food, he goes into one of these places where they roll up in the roller skates out of American Graffiti or Happy Days.
It takes like a half an hour to get
And they get the order wrong. Wait a minute, I ordered fried chicken. I didn't order turkey, you know? The whole thing is great. Alinda Cardinelli, as this wife that he's flirting with, does a very good job. But Keaton's the whole show. And, you know, I got to tell you, even though people are saying that he was such a prick, Ray Kroc, most of these business people are. It's history.
Thank
it's
you.
Real.
Thank
and
you.
Not only that, you have to say
he's
that
Trump.
that the two people that
he'll say anything to get his way. He's Donald Trump.
Well, if you're upset about Donald Trump,
no, I'm not.
And you're bringing that baggage into the movie.
Okay,
the point of the matter is that Nick Offerman and John Carroll Lynch, who play the two McDonald brothers, they were blocking his progress at every turn. He's like, hey, I got a way to do this and we can make more money.
If they'd been written smarter, it would have been a better movie. If he screwed over smart guys, it's a better movie than he screws over stupid guys.
I disagree because I have to agree with Neil because, you know, one thing, as Neil's saying this, I'm realizing, you know, most successful people, and let's just use Steve Jobs as an example. Nobody ever says Steve Jobs was a great guy.
But he's a prick in that movie from frame one.
Yeah, so
the movie doesn't lie to you.
No.
That's the movie I'm talking about. In the Steve Jobs movie, he's an asshole from the frame one. This movie treats this guy like a fable.
I disagree because like Neil just said, the guy's a loser. He's in his mid-50s. He's selling mixers, okay? He's not coming home when he should, okay? He's
Laura Dern is his wife.
Peter to pay for Paul.
Mortgages his house.
He's mortgaging his house.
That's all fascinating.
He doesn't tell his wife.
Well, you said it wasn't fascinating.
I agree with everything he said.
He mortgages his house and doesn't tell his wife, okay? He meets these guys. He takes advantage of them. I mean, throughout the movie, in my opinion, he's a charismatic bad guy.
All right.
What about you, Bill? What do you think of the movie?
I thought Michael Keaton was better than the movie.
I agree.
I liked his performance in it, but after a while, it kind of got repetitious. You know, all right, he's going to screw him over again. He's going to screw him over. He's going to screw over this guy. He's going to screw over this guy. It was kind of fun to watch him do it, but I kind of knew what to expect, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I found the whole thing to be very entertaining and historically interesting. And even, you know, all these ideas that Keaton kept coming up with, you're just smiling. I mean, is he a lovable protagonist? I don't know if he's lovable, but I found the whole thing to be like, I mean, this happened, and I'm watching this, and I'm eating it up, to use a food analogy.
So now we've got kids with type 2 diabetes, and they're all overweight because of fast food.
Are you bringing the fact that you don't like McDonald's into the fact that you don't like the movie?
I mean, love McDonald's.
Well,
should this play as a double feature with Super Size Me?
Yes, it should.
Yes, it should. That would be a great double feature.
Let's talk about Elle Fanning some more.
All right.
Don't do the creepy thing.
No, but she's in the next movie.
I'm sorry. Yes.
You deserve a break
good transition.
Today.
See,
I'm trying to do a transition.
See the founder. Okay.
20th Century Women.
20th Century Women. Okay, so 20th Century Women.
Also on your top 10 list, I hope.
No, I did not like 20th Century Women. Bill, would you like to tell everybody what 20th Century Women is about?
It's about an older woman. Played by Annette Bening. She's got a son. She widowed or divorced. It's been a while since I saw it.
No,
husband's out of the picture.
No,
she burns
not,
his car.
I don't even know. She's not widowed. The husband lives on the other coast.
Okay.
And the son doesn't see
I know that at the beginning of the movie, you see her burning his car. His car is burning.
She's catched on fire.
Yeah. She's out of it. He's out of the picture. She's
Once again, we've interrupted Mike Sargent's lunch.
she's bringing up his son. She's doing the best she can to raise him, but she needs the help of other women. And so Maggie Gyllenhaal shows up, and Elle Fanning sneaks in the young boy's bed and does nothing.
And the always gorgeous Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, not Maggie Gyllenhaal. Greta Gerwig.
Greta Gerwig.
G's confused.
Who we had drinks with the other night.
Oh, good for you.
No, you and I, you were there.
Well, that wasn't the other night. That was 2 months ago. But
a month ago. Christmas.
All right. Anyway, she was delightful. She was delightful.
She's tall and thinner in person.
Anyway, Billy Crudup is in the house, too.
That's right. He's the handyman.
So the deal is, you know, Bill, what do you guys, Mike and Bill, chime
well,
in
I
your
thought,
opinion,
I think Annette Bening gives probably one of the best performances of her career. I think she'll be nominated for an Oscar and has a very good chance of winning in a split year because of Rules Don't Apply and people love her. The movie touched a nerve for me because I was raised by a single mother, and this woman is very much an earth mother with people who live in this big house with her and revolve around her, and she's this wise woman. Someone described her as the mom from the movie that Cameron Crowe did.
Almost Famous?
Almost Famous. Like the Frances McDormand mom in that movie who was so concerned about her son.
Frances McDormand.
McDormand. This is like a whole movie around that character. I think that's accurate, and I think it's definitely worth seeing. You thought it was plotting and really didn't have a center, and there was no real story
here. Well, here's what
here.
I thought.
But okay. I thought it was great to spend time with these people.
Wait, let me tell you what I thought before you...
Tell me what you thought.
I thought it did take a while to get going. You know, it took a while for me to really like, okay, where is this movie going? I didn't see her so much as the Earth Mother and being so wise. I saw her as being a little bit lost, slightly clueless, and a little closed off, and not realizing that she was her own big problem. Her inability to communicate or her unwillingness to communicate is really what put that distance between her and her son. Her inability to maybe even
see
herself. That's how I saw her, because he kept trying to connect with her, and she'd brush him off and then throw other people towards him and, talk to this girl. And, you know, she didn't realize how
well, that was her relationship with men. I thought she understood and counseled women very well in the film.
I don't know that she counseled women that well, but I do think that Annette Bening gives a great performance. I think Billy Crudup is great.
Crudup
is great. I think he's one of those actors that never quite made it, but he should have, but he never quite did.
Speaking of Almost Famous.
Did you like the film, Bill Bregoli?
I kind of go along with Mike's idea is it's plodding and took a while to get going.
I didn't like the film at all. And even though, yes, they capture that bohemian Southern California 1970s, it takes place in 1979, mm-hmm. well, and I give credit to Annette Bening. I liked her performance. She's a very pretty woman, and she makes herself not so pretty in this particular film, and you got to give her credit for that. And I thought the supporting performances were good, so that's the positive. But the negative is this: there's no straight line narrative in this particular movie. I mean, it's just little moments, and the movie centers around, as you said, this boy who she's the overprotective mother and wants these other women. It takes a village, basically. It takes Greta Gerwig and Elle Fanning,
kind of a cool
who's
story.
Sleeping with the kid, but literally sleeping. They sleep in the same bed, but they're not having any kind of romantic or any kind of physical contact with each other. But, you know, I did not care about the kid. I did not care about Annette Bening. I didn't care about Greta Gerwig's storyline. Billy Crudup is kind of thrown into the movie. I didn't care about there's a love triangle. Billy Crudup has a thing for Greta Gerwig, but he also maybe has a thing for Annette Bening. Didn't care about that. And if you're going to make a movie with no straight narrative storyline, then you have to make me care about the characters. And I don't care about any of this. You know, I was very bored. The film ultimately went nowhere for me, and it was a slog to sit through.
I want to point out that Neil has company in this, because 6% of the audience who've reviewed the film don't like it.
Okay,
but
good.
94% on Rotten Tomatoes. 94%.
Well,
like
who are those 6%?
I don't know.
Okay, well,
obviously you're one of them.
They're the ones who don't care.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, that you say you didn't care. I can understand that, because
I think Variety.
It took
didn't
a while.
Like
it took a while for me to get into those characters. You know, ultimately, I did like Annette Bening, and I think ultimately she does carry the film, and she's very watchable. I enjoyed how much she did without saying anything. Because there's so many times where, you know, a character, especially her son's trying to get her to say something, and she's just stammering or, you know, can't say anything. And I think that that's just great acting.
Is it, do you recommend it or not, Neil?
No.
Is Annette Bening fans, will they like it? Is it a great performance?
I think they'll like her performance, but I don't think they'll like the movie.
Did you nominate her for a Broadcast Film Critics? Was she in one of your?
No, I don't think it's that great of a performance. I think it's a good performance, but the movie is so weak and uninvolving for me that that is tantamount.
So she's overrated as an actress, like Meryl Streep.
No, she's not
Donald Trump.
Funny. No, we're going to get to that in a second. But I want to say that she's a very good actress. I mean, I loved her in the Julianne Moore Mark Ruffalo movie, The Kids Are All Right. She's great in Bugsy. You always love that line, let me jerk your soda. Bill McCuddy always says that. She's a great actress. I don't think this movie serves her. If you guys...
The Grifters?
Bill Rigoli agrees with me.
If only I'd been her landlord in The Grifters.
Yeah, and you, Mike likes it, but I don't think he's in love with the movie. You know, I think it's a boring movie. I think that it's a story structure, and it did not involve me. All right, moving on. So, as Bill McCuddy just aptly brought up, yes, Meryl Streep. Calling Meryl Streep an overrated actress is like calling Michael Jordan an overrated basketball player, or Babe Ruth an overrated baseball player, or, you know, Muhammad Ali an overrated boxer. I mean, she is the most honored actor, of our generation. I think she's got more Academy Award nominations than any actor or actress in history.
But let me take the other side of this argument for a second, because everyone's had a couple of days to sort of digest all this. Everyone knows we're talking about the Trump put down at the Golden Globes. And it was the highlight of the Golden Globes because Fallon was otherwise, except for a brilliant La La Land opening, was kind of a dud. But let me just say this. You think America agrees with him? You think most people think Meryl Streep is overrated?
No.
You think everybody that voted for him believes that? I'll bet they do. I'll bet they think, ugh, she's in everything. She's like, I'm not sure, and I think she's an incredible talent. She's also one of the nicest people you'll ever interview. All right. But I got to tell you.
You think she's overrated?
I'll bet middle America thinks she's overrated.
Yeah, but I think that...
forget what anybody thinks.
Well, I'm just trying to give this argument some kind of credence, because...
I think the people that know the business, okay, are the people... I mean, you know, if you want to tell me that... you know,
Get nominated for everything. Does she deserve to be nominated for Florence Foster Jenkins?
Listen, if you want to tell me that Phil Jackson, okay, says that Michael Jordan is overrated as a basketball player, I will pay attention to what Phil Jackson has to say, because he's coached many, you know, because he's coached Michael Jordan, and he's gotten many NBA, Phil Jackson didn't say that, but I'm saying, if a sports writer, you know, tells me that Michael Jordan is overrated, I will pay attention to that more than, you know, but just some casual, your middle America guy, just some casual person who goes to the movies, you know, or some casual person who watches two or three basketball games.
Or Donald Trump.
You know, a year, you know, I don't think that that opinion carries weight with me on the merits of Meryl Streep's acting or the merits of Michael Jackson.
Well, he's a voter. He's a Screen Actors Guild voter, I bet.
True?
I bet he is. He has to be in SAG, Trump. And he's one of the 300,000 or 400,000 now in SAG after that gets to vote.
She won't be getting his vote.
But Cox used to review films. What does that mean?
No. Listen, I'm just making the argument here. I was as appalled as everyone else was when he tweeted that out. He's like a knee-jerk reaction to everything that happens in his life. But I got to tell you, as I think about it more, it's easy for the four of us to sit here and go, he's an idiot, that she's a great actress. We know she's a great actress.
Yeah, but I wonder if some people... She's overrated, too. It's easy to sit back.
So what I'm asking is, do you think a lot of people listening to this broadcast right now, well, if you're interested in movies, probably not.
No.
But people in America go, you know what? He's got a point. She's in everything.
The only point he has is on his head.
Yeah.
I think that you know, yeah. Do we as Americans and maybe human beings love to see, you know, put down people at the top? Sure. But to say she's overrated, yeah, okay. All that really means is she's been rated many, many times in many, many ways.
Hey, do you guys know where there's a screening of Hidden Fences? Because I really want to see that movie.
You haven't seen it?
Hidden Fences, that's the one where Octavia Spencer uses
snap. That mistake was made a bunch of times on the red carpet that night, and then Michael Keaton's called it that.
Well, do you think they're making a bigger deal of that?
We're talking about Hidden Figures, I believe.
That it should be, because, you know, I don't know, it's a two-syllable word. Fences, figures. Okay, they both start with F. You know, two people.
No,
on the
argument
show,
is it's a racist thing, because
do you think it's a racist thing?
No, I don't.
I think it's just a clueless thing.
Right. Yeah, it's a clueless thing.
It's a clueless
thing.
It's the movie where Octavia Spencer uses math to put Denzel Washington into space.
Oh, I thought it was the movie where Donald Trump builds a wall, but you just can't see it.
Listen, when Obama
that's funny.
When Obama started to run for president, okay. And not a lot of he was not a national figure, and not a lot of people knew who he was. There were a lot of journalists on TV that kept saying Osama by mistake. Okay, I don't think that that is a racist thing. I just think that, you know, saying hidden fences instead of hidden figures. Yeah.
The hidden fences figures could be called a little more racist because people just get the two black movies mixed up.
Let me ask you: if Hidden Figures was about three Southern white women, okay, hypothetically speaking,
that didn't get
their due because they were women, okay? Uh-huh. You're telling me that you don't think that those mistakes would have happened, that somebody would have said hidden fences
instead?
Sure,
they might have. They might have,
right?
Absolutely.
I'm saying that I don't think it had to, I don't know, but what do you think, Mike?
Let me preface it to say that I don't think it matters at all. But I think that, I think it's just like, it's that other black film. You know, it got...
But Moonlight was another black film.
And Loving was another black film.
And Loving was another black film.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound anything like Figures.
Yeah, that's true. Fences and Figures. I mean,
you know, I mean, it's an easy mistake, you know, to make a mistake. Like, we've done it on the show where we'll say one thing over another. I just think it's ill-prepared to a certain
level. Look, John Travolta messed up Idina Menzel's name,
That's classic.
You know?
What about when somebody call Morgan Freeman Larry Fishburne on a red carpet once or something? That was a big deal.
Yes, but I apologized.
Did anybody call Ryan Gosling Ryan Reynolds by mistake?
Ryan Gosling called himself Ryan Reynolds
that
night, which he thought was funny.
They're interchangeable for me. I could just, I forget who's who. Bryce Dallas Howard and what's her name?
The other redhead. Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain. You know, I could.
Why do we need them both? I think Trump would agree we should thin out the herd. We should.
Jessica Dallas Howard, I could.
That's funny. Well, I don't know. What's your take, Bill Bregoli, on this whole thing?
Is it racist, Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's lumping stuff together, and the fact that it was a two-syllable word that began with the letter F just kind of gelled in their brains.
It could have been hidden moonlight fences.
I mean, the truth is you said it twice to Mike, and he didn't get that you were getting
it
wrong.
I know, Mike didn't get it.
I didn't even get it for a second.
I know, but I got
it. Get it
there second. We go.
So there it is,
Kumbaya. Can we all just hold hands?
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's talk one more thing about the Globes before we go. Somebody said that Meryl Streep's speech legitimized the Globes. I don't know who wrote that.
Legitimized the Globes?
Yeah.
You're going to have to do an awful lot to legitimize
the Globes. And then Wahlberg the next day said actors shouldn't have political opinions or shouldn't express them in shows like that.
Did you see the cut to Vince
Dingle's
Vaughn?
Dingle's kidneys.
Mel Gibson. Supposedly during, we don't know that that's true, during Meryl's, the Daily Mail, two places have made a big thing about this. So when Meryl Streep was giving that speech, they have an isolated shot of Gibson and Vaughn, and Vaughn is a big right-wing guy too. Supposedly looking annoyed at this speech, and that's been made a big deal of.
Yeah, but why?
I think Mel Gibson was brave to show up to that night in the first place, given that everybody doesn't like him in that room.
Sure, but I don't think actors shouldn't have opinions. I think that at the end of the day, everybody has an opinion, and if we're looking at a president who used any platform possible to become president, and he knows the power of media. So if you've got a platform, you have something to say, why not say it?
As I was watching
your opinion is any better than anybody else's.
As I was watching the Golden Globes, I kept saying to myself, which I say every year, the BFCA, which gives out the Critics' Choice Awards, they're, because coming first out of the box this year, they're trying to compete with the Golden Globes. But I'm watching this. The Golden Globes, even though... And it's kind of sad because their voting body, as we've talked about on this show, is just really terrible.
Affable.
I mean, they have so much prestige. It's the Golden Globes. It's on NBC. Everybody comes out in their dressed to the nines in their finest gowns and tuxedos, and everybody. And there's 2 hours of pre-red carpet.
And they make a lot of money. Dick Clark Productions pays them a lot of money.
And I've said this on the show many, many times before. It's that, when they created – when the Golden Globes was the first award show other than – there were only four award shows. There was the – Emmys for television, the Tonys for Broadway, the Grammys for music, and the Oscars for movies. And Dick Clark very smartly said, gee, these things are getting a lot of ratings.
If you build it, they will come.
Right. So he found this organization, the Hollywood Foreign Press, that they, I don't even know if they had an award ceremony. I think they were just like sending people probably, you know, like you won a Golden Globe Award and put it on TBS, you know, and, which was this, you know, WTBS, which was a.
I think they were always using it to meet celebrities. I think they always.
Well, that show got ratings.
90 people, we should
signed a contract with them. And they were the ones that were there first of the new awards. And afterwards came the People's Choice Awards and the American Country Music Award and all these other award shows, you know.
No, they get ratings. They get some ratings.
But you got to understand that a lot of these Golden Globe voters, it's like, yes, I have a newsletter that's read by 12 people in Uganda. I'm a member of the Hollywood Foreign, you know, Foreign Press. It's
the Polish penny saver.
British, the Broadcast Film Critics Association is a such more legitimate body. But I'm watching this lit, you know, the other night, and I'm saying, we'll never the Critics' Choice. The Golden Globes is so established, people don't know, and Middle America doesn't really care that the voting body isn't that really.
They love that the stars show up and they get drunk.
And basically,
when something wins on the Golden, oh, thank you, Hollywood Foreign Press. Who are you thanking? You're thanking a bunch of, you know, not really prestigious.
Well, the real question for this conversation,
the name Hollywood Foreign Press, doesn't even make sense. It's like, well, you're Hollywood, but then why are you foreign? What's
well, they're
people they from
write
foreign
outlets,
countries who work
they write
in
for outlets around
they're
the world.
They're illegal aliens. But,
They're illegal aliens. One of them a couple of years ago sold refrigerators at Circuit City. They did like they don't say who they are, but they were able to find a couple of them.
Yeah.
The real question is whether they've legitimized the Oscars at all. Whether they have picked legitimate.
Do you think Moonlight has a better shot now at winning an Oscar because it beat out Manchester by the Sea in the drama category for best film?
I don't, because I think the Oscars likes to zig where the Globes zag, and I think there are plenty of examples of that. But
I agree.
P is the door.
I will say that for best actress, though, they're for the at least for the 21st century, they've been 10 out of 16.
Oh, okay.
All right. So,
very good.
All right. Well, anyway.
What about next week?
Next week, we've got Gold with Matthew McConaughey.
It's Fool's Gold.
We're doing Gold.
It's Gold and Fool's Gold.
And we're doing a whole bunch of films. What else are we doing, Bill?
Well, I like Magnificent Seven, speaking of Fences and Denzel Washington.
That's my pick.
Yes, we have Justine Browning from We've Got This Covered. She's going to be on the show next week.
She's on.
And we're going to do.
She won't eat her lunch during the show.
Michael Fassbender film called Trespass
Against Us.
Trespass Against Us.
That's what they should have
called. And we're
going to
do another movie. What else are we doing? Let me think. We're doing.
Something with love in the title.
I think Assassin's Creed should have been called Trespass.
Christine.
Christine about a
news anchor.
About a news anchor who kills herself on television. It's a musical.
Yeah, that's true.
Boy, that had some Oscar buzz died fast. But we'll talk about that next week.
For Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
Mike Sargent.
Yes.
Bill McCuddy.
I'm finishing Mike's sandwich.
And me, Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies with you again next week. Hey, right, Bill, say your catch line.
Catch line? What? Void where prohibited? We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Catch phrase. Okay. All right. See you next week.